that out of the office reply that you may have said at your workplace may be doing more than just letting people know you are away. Could auto messages quietly share more information than people realize? Joining us to talk about this and more is Dr. Vahid Behzadun, who is our cybersecurity and AI expert on the show, but also is an associate professor at the University of New Haven. Welcome back, Vahid. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Great to be with you.
So this out-of-the-office reply, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, that's an interesting one. Yeah, so the issue is we often think we're being helpful when we set up our out-of-office auto-reply email. But the issue is we often end up oversharing. We may share pieces of information that can be exploited by scammers. These pieces of information include the exact date when we are out of office. Like we may say we'll be traveling from this date to this date. Now, this gives a malicious actor, like a thief, information about when your house or office is going to be empty, and also allows a hacker to know exactly how long you won't be checking your inbox to catch their fraudulent activity.
It kind of reminds me, Vahid, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the warnings that we've gotten, I'd say, in recent years about posting too much on your social media, so on your stories, for example, you know, showing I'm at the airport or I'm in this country or I'm away doing this. And that, to me, just screams, oh, okay, so your house is probably empty, so I could rob it, right? I mean, kind of similar, maybe not the exact same, but similar sort of warnings that we get about social media and oversharing while you're away.
Precisely. There's a great deal that's in common between oversharing on social media and oversharing in the out-of-office auto-reply. But the out-of-office auto-reply opens a few other vulnerabilities for the business side of things as well. For instance, in my auto-replies, I often include backup contacts. Like, if you need to reach me, reach out to this alternative contact instead. But this can also be exploited by scammers. It's like giving them a warm lead. They can now email your colleague and say, hey, I'm with this person, the person who's written the out-of-office email at a hotel or a resort or a conference, and they need you to wire this payment immediately. This is unfortunately way too common. And the information that enables this sort of scam comes from the auto-reply email, the out-of-office email. And sometimes we also share even more information, like work schedules or internal only email addresses or internal hierarchies. So in general, the rule of thumb to mitigate these sort of attacks or instances of theft is to be vague and simple.
I was just going to ask that, Vahid. Like, how do you know you're being vague and simple? So you tell me, okay, I'm not taking any time off for a little bit, but what do you want me to write when I'm away? First of all, can I just say I think away messages are one of the funniest things ever because, let's be real, the average American is not taking a break from their email. I know for myself, I'm still checking my email. I don't even bother. I honestly don't bother with the away messages. I'm like, this is silly because I'm going to check and I'm just going to delete or, oh, I just won't answer, whatever. But anyways, I digress. What do you want our away message to look like? When you say vague, are we saying I'm out of the office? Are we saying I'm not checking email as often? Like, what do you want our messages to say?
So it should be very simple. Something like, thank you for your message. I'll respond when I'm back. For urgent matters, please call our main office line or email this generic department email address. And it may also be helpful if you're out of office, auto-reply is set up to go out with a little bit of a delay, not not exactly when you leave for your vacation, because as you just said, regardless, many of us still check emails when we are traveling. It's helpful if it goes out maybe a day or two after you actually go on your vacation. So no detailed information about the dates you are out of office, no detailed information about who precisely to contact, and no need to be overly helpful by providing too much internal information. These are the rules of thumb that I would recommend everybody to follow when they're setting up their out of office email.
Okay, so then wait, Vahid, because I got to make sure I do this right. So you don't even want us to say, if you can't get through to me, contact this person, because I do that. You don't want us to do that?
Yeah, instead of saying, I understand that you're trying to be helpful by putting that line in the chat, but instead of providing a name, maybe helpful, it may be a little safer if you just provide the departmental email address, like contact reporting at voiceofct.com, or contact our main office line.
I see. So you're vague. And interestingly enough, you don't want us to put an out date, like I will return to the office on this date. You'd rather be as vague as possible. I mean, do you even say you're out of the office, or do you say I'm, you know, do you say like I'm not checking emails or I'm unavailable right now. Wow. You're going real vague. So I'm just unavailable. Sorry.
So let me go back to the template that I just gave you.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to say anything about whether you are away or not. Thank you for your message. I'll respond with a bit of delay. For urgent matters, please call our main office.
Oh, I like that. Okay, Vahid, I like that. I literally am writing this down as you're saying this, because you think I'm not going to take your advice and make that my away message in the future. You're crazy. We're chatting with Dr. Vahid Behzadun, who is our cybersecurity and AI expert on the show. He's also an associate professor at the University of New Haven. Let's switch gears here, Vahid. A Wall Street Journal article recently highlighted the dark side of artificial intelligence, specifically AI companions. And I will link this article to our website, voiceofct.com. It shows a real concern from top psychiatrists in the country, increasingly agreeing that using artificial intelligence chatbots could be linked to cases of psychosis. It says since the spring, dozens of potential cases have emerged of people suffering from delusional psychosis after engaging in lengthy AI conversations with OpenAI's ChatGPT and other chatbots. It also says several people have died by suicide and there has been at least one murder. Now, I don't know if this is also referencing a recent lawsuit in Lower Fairfield County, but there is a family talking about a situation where a man killed his mom and himself. So it was a murder-suicide. But the family is suing ChatGPT for this exact reason. And Vahid, I want to first kind of back up and define for people, when we hear AI companion, what is that?
Typically, that term refers to an AI chatbot like ChatGPT, a conversational agent, either through text or through conversations, auditory and verbal conversations. And these companions, these chatbots, engage in prolonged conversations, typically of a personal nature.
But are you engaged? So, sorry, I probably sound like a dingus, but are you just talking to yourself, basically? Are you talking to something that somebody else has generated the information? Like, are you, I mean, I would imagine the reason there's such a concern with psychosis is because you're kind of giving it information about yourself. And it's just, I would think, almost giving you encouragement, like, yep, what you're saying is true, or, you know, like, you're almost talking to yourself.
Well, yes and no. That's actually a very deep question. You aren't talking to another person, but you are talking to something that's impersonating another person. That something is a very sophisticated language model. It knows how to generate responses that seem natural. And as we've discussed before, when we were talking about the Fairfield County case, Melissa, the issue of sycophancy, these chatbots being overly affirming or overly confirming of everything that the user says, can be amplified in people who are suffering from certain mental disorders. Here's the thing. Historically, people believed the TV was talking to them, but the TV never talked back. With AI, we have an interactive machine, an interactive system that can emulate a very realistic two-way emotional exchange.
Mm-hmm.
The chatbot answers using your tone, your memories, your fears. It can mirror you if there are no proper guardrails put in place by the developer of the chatbot. And this can create a very powerful psychological loop. Now, before we go any further, I was mentioned that after our last conversation, a friend of mine who works for the OpenAI safety team reached out to me and told me that they actually have a system in place that detects over-attachment and over-reliance.
Really? Is that new?
Apparently, it's been in there for about a year, maybe a bit shorter than that. But when it detects over-attachment or over-reliance in personal, medical, or psychological matters, it directs the chatbots to produce responses that are a bit less leading or reaffirming of personal issues or personal convictions. I'm not entirely sure how well that system works. I haven't seen any data being published by OpenAI or even third-party researchers about the efficacy and the reliability of that guardrail. But apparently that guardrail has been put in place. So that's,
well, that's good.
That's a bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm glad to know that that's a focus. And I'm glad you said that, because that was what I was going to ask, is do we need more guardrails? And obviously we have some, but maybe they're not at the place. Because here's the question that I would have, Vahid, which is, great, so we've got the guardrail, but how soon does that kick in? So, for example, I mean, people get attached. And at what point does the chatbot realize, oh, wait, this is going into a dark place? Because, I mean, I don't know what would trigger, wait, this is becoming dangerous versus, oh, this is just somebody who enjoys talking to me, right? I mean, that becomes a gray line. And I don't know, even if there's a guardrail in place, if we have figured out, does it interrupt going down a dark path soon enough?
Well, that's the claim. I've never personally seen this in action.
Interesting.
But the claim is they have a system that detects issues with, just as you said, going way too deep down the rabbit hole. But in general, as you mentioned, we need more guardrails, and not all of those guardrails are of a technological kind. For instance, relatives, parents, friends may be able to help if they notice a loved one or a friend is spending hours alone chatting at night or using AI as emotional replacement instead of support, or believing the AI is telling them who they are. That's the time to step in. And We know, as I mentioned, companies like OpenAI or Google with their Gemini chatbot or others are actively building guardrails. Like, newer models are getting better at recognizing distress and redirecting conversations toward help rather than feeding delusion. So at the end of the day, I think knowing what these systems are, having a little bit of technical information about how these systems work can be very helpful, but making sure that we do not completely replace human connection interaction with a chatbot, at least just yet, maybe another step towards a safer interaction with these systems.
Right. I mean, I'm glad that you mentioned that, Vahid, because, yeah, I think that's a huge part of the story, right? I mean, it's like anything, video games, social media. You know, when you are shutting out the world, you know, that leads to what could be interacting with a chatbot, and we don't want that. And so, you know, there is kind of a social responsibility we have to just care about one another and make sure that they're not isolating or that they are only engaging with social media, chatbots, you know, the video game world, what have you. So I think that is important to note as well. Dr. Vahid Behzadan, I always appreciate having you on the show and getting your expertise. Thank you so much. And I'm sure we're going to talk again really soon.